Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we discuss a very special program that's operating right here in our midst. California Lawyers for the Arts is a nonprofit organization founded in 1974 to provide legal services to artists and members of the creative arts community. In 1987, Bay Area Lawyers for the Arts joined forces with Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts Los Angeles to form California Lawyers for the Arts as a statewide organization. California Lawyers for the Arts is part of an informal network of Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts programs that serve artists through state-based organizations throughout the United States. CLA is a multifaceted arts service organization that provides legal support, alternative dispute resolution services, educational programs, and advocacy for the arts and justice reform. And let me congratulate you, CLA is currently celebrating its 50th anniversary. And to help us join in the celebration, CLA's Executive Director, Alma Robinson, will join us tonight in Your Legal Rights. Alma, welcome to Your Legal Rights, but it looks like you haven't come alone.
No, and thank you, Jeff, for inviting me to come and bring a crew. I have brought Carter Lewis, who is the program manager for our Design and Creative Futures program, which you mentioned. He operates this program in the Bay Area. It's a statewide program, and you'll hear a lot about it tonight. I'm so happy we have a chance to talk about it. Also, we have Rodney E. Jackson Jr., who is the co-founder and artistic director of SF BATCO, SF Bay Area Theater Company. They just finished a wonderful program at Brava Theater, which had a series of short plays, and he can talk about that a little bit as well. But he's been an active partner with us in taking our interns from the Design and Creative Futures program. And we also have a very successful intern from that program who worked with Rodney, Isaiah Love. Isaiah has his own company called Design Systems, and they do graphics, website design, and he's working with AI, doing some very exciting work, and learned some of those skills when he was at San Quentin. So I'm excited about bringing these guests to you and being back on Your Legal Rights. I was on the show many years ago.
And with that, let me tell you, our most important guest is all of you. Please feel free to join us. Our phone number is 841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. We'd be very happy to hear from you. We're not giving out legal advice tonight, but we do want to hear from you. And with that, let me welcome all of you here, Carter Lewis, Rodney Jackson, Isaiah Love, and it goes without saying, Alma Robinson, once again, thank you for joining us tonight. You know, I was looking through to get a little bit of background, and I was looking through your website, and I came across a quote that said, keeping true to our mission that all Americans should have access to the arts, I saw firsthand how arts programming within San Quentin Prison is changing lives for the better. Let me turn it over. I'll start with you, Alma, but what was the California Lawyers for the Arts doing in San Quentin Prison?
Wow, that's such a great question. It takes me all the way back to 2011, when we were working on advocacy to restore funding for the arts in California. Arts funding had been pretty cleared out in 2003, along with funding for programs in state prisons. We teamed up with an organization called the William James Association, which was managing several programs that were run by arts organizations. And in San Quentin, you may know that there are many volunteers working with different kinds of programs. Everybody from the Warriors with basketball to Marin Shakespeare, presenting Shakespeare in the prison and bringing in people from outside. So I got to know people that were in those programs. I was seeing how the arts have a way of restoring folks' sense of purpose their ability to work, to be disciplined, to work well with others, and to come out better than when they went in, which is the goal of incarceration. It should be rehabilitation, not endless punishment without any good ease, reason in sight. So we were starting with San Quentin and other state prisons. We ran a series of surveys, pre and post surveys, amongst folks that were taking arts classes to have a sense of the evidence behind this theory that we had, that arts programs would be helpful. And in fact, the results were so astounding through this evidence-based demonstration project, we called it, working with Dr. Larry Brewster from USF, that the state government restored funding, and now it's $8 million a year in all state prisons in California for arts programs. It's really extraordinary. And so when people started coming out, and that process was accelerated during COVID, we thought about creating an internship program. What were they going to do with their interest in arts and tech? And so that's where this program originated.
You know, on a personal level, I'm a firm believer that idle hands are a devil's playground. And when you start giving people new interests and showing them stuff that they can really do and that give them their life some meaning, the likelihood that they're going to find themselves aimlessly falling into bad situations goes way, way down.
Absolutely. Yeah. Same for arts in schools. And that's where that quote comes from, arts for everybody. Because when you discover your own humanity and what you can contribute to society, to your family, it's a much healthier place to be than when you're just angry and isolated.
So let me turn back a little bit. One of the things I noticed in prepping tonight, and also in just looking at your website from back in the day, I noticed that you just celebrated, or are still celebrating, 50 years of service to the arts. What are your current, what kind of things do you have going now? I mean, obviously, I would only speculate that the you were involved in much fewer things at the beginning, and an organization like yours has a tendency to grow and find a great deal of useful information and useful things that you can get involved with over the years. Talk about some of the things you have going now.
Well, you mentioned our lawyer referral service, alternative dispute resolution. We have expanded the lawyer referral service to include short consultations, so that if people just need a quick slice of information from a lawyer, say about a copyright infringement issue, or if they're trying to decide if they should file a complaint in court, usually the answer is no. Maybe you should try mediation instead, because as you know, litigation is very expensive, time consuming, and it wrecks relationships. So we're starting to recruit attorneys to do the half-hour consultation, not committing to do more than that. And if the client needs more service from us, they come back and get engaged with an attorney who might be able to do pro bono service through a longer engagement. But many people just need a quick contract review. If it's a short contract or memo, we can provide that. And we can do that for a variety of legal issues. I mentioned contract, and there's also trademark, patent issues, and disputes, and negotiations of contracts, which is very important. People often need to know what they can ask for in a given art discipline. So we're doing that. We're also have an internship program for youth, which is based in San Francisco. We call it Spotlight on the Arts. We place artists, young artists who are in high school or finishing high school, in arts internships for the summer, and give them career and college counseling. And that program became the basis of our Design and Creative Futures program, which works with formerly incarcerated people who are coming out. and looking for a way to get started, get their careers going.
Why did you start designing Creative Futures?
Why didn't we start it? It was started during COVID, actually, our concept of it, because we wrote to 21 arts organizations that were doing arts programs inside. And this was in response to the governor's office saying that they wanted to release people earlier because of COVID, because there's been a severe overcrowding problem in our state prisons anyway. And then during COVID, it intensified the spreading of the disease. So they decided to release people early. And we thought, well, we'll reach out to the artists that have been providing classes and get recommendations for who they would release. Who they would recommend to be released earlier. And we sent 525 names to the governor's office. And the response was, well, this is really interesting, but what are they going to do when they get out? We don't want to release people into poverty and unemployment and homelessness. That sparked us to create a jobs program, a job development program in the arts. And it's been extremely successful. We've placed over 175 people in paid arts internships with 55 arts organizations around the state. And in the Bay Area, we've placed 37 people. And our completion rate for these 4-month internships is over 80%. So we think that's pretty good track record.
So what started as a sifting mechanism of sorts actually grew into a bridge to get people a lift when they get started and give them some direction and a place to go and to get there.
That's exactly right. And we're starting an alumni program for people who have completed the program. We're now embarking on our 4th year of the program. We had a really generous state contract. We're starting negotiations with the state, hoping that we can continue the program. But we got a $3 million contract from the state to do this program statewide. And we were able to expand it from a beginning in San Diego, where we started with some startup money from the National Endowment for the Arts, and then went to LA, and then finally the Bay Area. So it's truly a statewide program.
Carter,
It's great.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's very exciting to see people kind of realize their sense of purpose and who they can be in the world, and you see their confidence grow. The special thing about working with arts organizations and their nonprofit organizations is that they are usually in the business of human development. They're not profit oriented. They're not counting widgets all day long, although they have to stay above water. They can't be. Nonprofit doesn't mean you're unprofitable. It just means that your motive is for a community good, for the benefit of the community. And in this environment, you get much more substantial mentoring and support, as an intern than you might in a business organization, for example.
And that's a perfect segue. Let me flip it over to Carter. In our talks about interns, talk a little bit about the breadth of work that the interns perform, some of the things you've had them do, and what organizations you've sent them to.
Yeah, well, we have placed interns in various different types of organizations. The focus areas range from arts education to theater to dance, even management, arts management, marketing, so array of things. Typically, when I assess potential interns, basically we just try to focus on their goal. And what we try to do is just try to find the perfect match for them as close as we can to their focus. So when we say arts, we mean it's all encompassing. It's music, it's pottery, it's what any form of writing. We have all kinds of different disciplines that the interns participate in. And various organizations. We've had interns at locally, we've had like interns at SFBATCO, Rodney's here. We've had interns at the Crucible, Marin Shakespeare, San Francisco International Arts Festival, and this coming term, we actually have the De Young. We're very excited about the De Young taking interns as well. So all different types of disciplines are focused on with the interns.
And you mentioned SF-BATCO, and of course, that's the Bay Area Theater Company. And
Yes.
I understand that I'll bring Rodney and Isaiah into the conversation because my understanding is that the two of you got to work together when Isaiah was placed at SF-BATCO. What was that like for each of you?
Yeah, that was amazing. Rodney Earl Jackson Jr. here, co-founder and artistic director of SF-BATCO, San Francisco Bay Area Theater Company. It was incredible for us. We are a small nonprofit organization, like a small business here in San Francisco, an arts organization that, like Alma said, that has the motives of doing social good, though we are still a business. And it's not the easiest thing to do that in San Francisco unless you're like have tech money. So we were blessed to have the partnership of an internship with California Lawyers for the Arts to support all of the foundational things that go into building up a theater company. Their interns have done so many cool things for us. They've been stage hands. They've helped move sets. They've helped be like the techies. They've helped be volunteers for box office. They've helped build websites. They've helped us understand how to make a lookalike audience. I didn't even know what that was at first. Then Isaiah was like, I gotta tell y'all about this really cool stuff that you guys aren't doing to target the different people to bring to your theater. You know, because it takes a village to make any organization work. And we do so much work creating the art, investing in all of the amazing artists and all the playwrights and dancers, but we don't always know how to tell our story or like to sell the story. And Isaiah's like, I have so many great tools for you all. And that's what's happened with each intern. You know, all these people who've come from different walks of life and have their different pasts, we've seen so many incredible advantages bringing them with us. They, like our artists, are not people who are normal people. We're all the weird ones in the world. So we kind of really do see each other. And there's this lack of judgment, the stigma that is dropped naturally when working with an arts organization. So, from our perspective of the theater organization side, it's been incredible. But I'll let Isaiah elaborate more.
It's Isaiah, founder of Design Systems. So when I came, it's interesting because the program is for people who are just getting out of prison. I had already been out of prison for like maybe a year, but I was in need of a job because I just got laid off from a tech job at Plaid, right? And so when I left Plaid, I dived heavily into marketing. And because of that, like I was able to come in at SF-BATCO and kind of help out in that area, right? At first, it was like, man, what am I gonna do? And I naturally just kind of gravitated towards that because that's what I had been doing for like the last few months or whatever. And I think you guys are spending some crazy amount. So I forgot what the outside company you guys are working with. And I don't think I was the one to convince you of it, but just having that conversation with Adam, who's also a partner at SF-BATCO with Rodney, man, I think we're able to at least cut that marketing bill in half, like you know what I mean, and just have me run those Google ads and those Facebook and the IG ads and stuff like that, and not to mention they have a super great woman that works there, Vanessa, who's just phenomenal with the social media. So like me and her just teaming up on that, and just I don't know, for me the experience was great, right? The group at SF-BATCO, they're like I don't know, I just connected with them immediately, you know what I mean? And like I still do some contract work with them. I'm just not as many hours, but I still hang out, you know, I still come to their shows and stuff like that, and I look forward to continuing to work with them.
Tell us a little about what you learned there
At SF-BATCO?
at SF-BATCO.
Well, I learned like, okay, well, one of the things that stood out to me, I guess one of the things I learned is like I have a fascination with anybody building anything, organizations, businesses, or whatever. And so one thing I learned was like first I got a firsthand eyewitness, like ground level, like a perspective of like what it is, all the energy, all the time, all the coordination, the teamwork that goes into producing shows, to running a theater company. And so that's like the biggest thing, right? Just like seeing how they manage, like just seeing like all you know, like the logistics and the operations of that. And so and that so that was pretty dope.
And how did you've gone through a couple phases at first? You went through SF Batco into the through the Design and Creative Futures program. How did that prepare you for what's next in your career and where you're going now?
I would say the way that it prepared me, mainly, I guess, you know, like I would say that the biggest impact to answer your question is like the networking opportunity, right? It gave me, it put me, and it just, I would say it widened my network, right? Because had I not done the internship, I wouldn't have met Alma, I wouldn't have met Carter, I wouldn't have met Rodney and everybody at Sebeco, and then like people outside of that network as well. And I wouldn't, you know, quite honestly, I probably wouldn't have been on your show today, right? So the benefits are you know are unforeseeable. You know, we don't know what comes from this, but I would say that's the main thing though.
But in addition to networking, it sounds like you learned some skills.
So I mean, I came in, okay, so well, came in with the marketing, like the foundation, but to apply it, because you always learn, like, okay, you have these foundational skills, and then when you're applying it to a different industry, because I was applying it to mainly, I was building funnels for like insurance agents, it's a different funnel, it's a different marketing. So like it gave me that experience, right? Okay, like, oh, okay, how do I increase ticket sales for theater companies? So that's I'm always juiced about, you know, like putting my practical knowledge into real world. Okay, I see your hand up.
Well, one thing that I've observed, and I think it might be true of you too, Isaiah, is that people's confidence grows because they see that their skills are valuable
Yeah.
in different contexts. So
Facts.
you're able to market yourself as a professional with this in your background. You've had this great artistic client, and obviously continue to work with them. So that's a good relationship, good
Yeah, true.
communication, et cetera. And so we're building your skill set and your resume as well.
Yeah. That's that I would definitely say that. Thank you. Yeah, definitely.
It also sounds like, in addition to building your skill sets, you're expanding greatly the applications of the skills that you had so that you'll see new uses for what you bring to the table.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
Well, I think even the companies grow from the interns. I think we got a lot of advantages from it. Each person who came through the program left a big imprint on the company. We watched the individuals, some of who are navigating re-entry into society, develop deep sense of accountability, like agency. I saw fearlessness. You know, they were just very, very much different people who sometimes, you know, more shy in the beginning, who then were like, I was like, no, this is your job. Can you do this? They're like, all right, I guess I got to take this whole role. They told me that, like, no one has told me to be responsible for something like this in a long time and trust me to be responsible for this whole category. And that's what we were taught, give people more agency to lead. And they were like, oh, I can be a leader. And I saw that happening actively with each intern that SFBACO had.
Yeah, I like to point out that Isaiah is one cross-section of the type of interns we have. We have interns on many different levels. Isaiah came to his internship with skills that he could apply, professional skills. He'd worked in marketing, he'd worked in tech. But we have some interns who've just had the inspiration to be an artist. Maybe they draw or paint or whatever, and so they have to go in the organization. And so our goal is really to place them in the organization where they're going to soar and, as Rodney pointed out, have agency. And I feel that one of the key components of the program is networking. When you think about arts, even arts and entertainment, Really, like growing your career is based on who you know and creating networks and gaining rich relationships of people who are going to mentor you. I mean, that's really what the arts are all about. Other vocations, you can, go to nursing school and, do the training, get out, they have placement. Arts is, it's more organic. And another key part of that is just the agency and the wherewithal to know where to start. I feel like anyone who's going to be in the arts and on any level, you have to have this sort of innate ability to market yourself. And I think that's very difficult for people who are shy, people who are who have endured trauma and coming out into society and having to deal with, the world and getting a job and all that. And so it can kind of squash your dreams. And so what we try to do with the program is really create an opportunity for people who want to enter the arts on any level. The internship is 16 weeks. We pay them $20 an hour. They don't have to worry about that. They go to the organization. We provide the organization with all the support they need. We also have amazing workshops that we do with the interns every month. We do workshops around financial literacy, job readiness, communication, wellness, all different workplace etiquette. We do all different things. So we're trying to give new skills and help hone, skills that people already have to help them create a better career in the arts.
They also get college counseling if they want to take advantage of that. And we've had some people that are going back to school earning graduate degrees in various subjects that may not be directly arts related. We had a fellow in Southern California who's getting a degree in data analysis at UC San Diego, and he had been working in arts organizations when he was inside. So the transference of these skills is very important as well. So we know that the arts career path is not very smooth and it's challenging, but you can use a lot of these skills, this agency that Rodney mentioned, and to develop a career path in many different directions. We're not trying to encourage people to be professional artists.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, where tonight we're talking with the California Lawyers for the Arts, learning about programs they're running, including reentry programs where they're actually going into prison and working with people, or where they're helping people get a helping hand when they get out, really helping artists of all sorts getting off, getting on their feet and get their careers going. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. And as always, you can call with any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk to them about getting an artistic career going or the type of training they might offer. You don't have to jump into the very point we may be in our conversation. And with that, I do have a couple of direction changes I want to make when we come back after for the second half hour. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So, Carter, tell us a little bit about the professional development workshops that you've been providing for interns and the college and career counseling that they receive.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the college and career counseling service is just amazing. We have in each city that we're in San Diego, Los Angeles, and in the Bay Area, we have career and education counselors who work with the interns to help them, craft their goals, set goals, look for scholarships, look for other job opportunities, other internships and fellowships. And so that's really great. They have 16 weeks with someone who's like literally one-on-one with them, helping them strategize and do their searches and research. So that's an extraordinary benefit that we offer. In the workshops that we provide. These are, we sort of coined them as professional and personal development workshops. It goes without saying that a lot of folks who have come, well, most folks who come out will have endured some type of trauma. So we try to work through some of those things and get them sort of acclimated, helping them with job skills, how to find a job, how to look for a job, how to write a resume. We do communication. Communication is a really hard one. I think the internship gives people a great opportunity to practice that because they're training with us on different communication skills, and then they're going to their internships and coming back and saying, "Oh my gosh, it worked. If I just spoke up and advocated for myself, it worked." Things like that. And so that's but we offer all we have wow, self-care, wellness is something that we've worked on very diligently this year because we realized that we were doing a lot of the technical, like job preparation and communication and financial literacy. But we realized that, people also need to, learn how to prioritize themselves and to take care of themselves and to, set strategic goals, long-term, short-term goals. And so they're great. We do them every month. It's a 4-hour workshop that we do. We are very fortunate in the Bay Area to partner with LinkedIn. LinkedIn hosts all of our workshops at their corporate office. They provide catering and they treat us like royalty. It's really wonderful. And it's great for them to be there. They learn about the tool, LinkedIn, how to build a resume online and sort of build a profile online. But the workshops are fun and it's always great to hear the feedback because I think for us, when we're setting out to plan them and to do them, they seem daunting, but the response is amazing. The interns get so much from that, from the workshops, but not only the information that we give them, but just the community building that they're doing. There's a lot of community building. As Alma said, we're having a great alumni program that we're putting together. And so, and that's just born out of the fact that people are just coming together and creating great networks with each other.
Let me turn it to Ernie from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, thanks. I'm Ernie on the Embarcadero, and speaking of the Embarcadero, I have a question about the legality of some of this public, what they call art. Do I have any recourse for having to look at the eyesores, like this ridiculous bow and arrow that they have shooting into the ground that they paid millions of dollars of public money just to make my life and my visuals miserable?
Alma, you look like you're ready to field that one.
Oh, I think so. Ernie, I'm sorry that you're not enjoying the public art. The Art Commission in San Francisco is where you would want to go with your complaint if it's offending you or you find it distracting as a driver on the Embarcadero. Are you talking about the Cupid sculpture?
I don't know what it is. It's just, you think of art and you're thinking of Picasso or something like that, and you got these, I don't know what they call them, sculptures or whatever. It's just not even art. It's just like somebody's recycling their trash and putting it on the Embarcadero and charging the taxpayers millions. It's fantastic. Only
Well,
in
I'm sorry.
California.
No, public art is a national and even international genre of art. I'm sorry you're not enjoying it, but it is a respected genre, and some of it is paid not just by taxpayers, but also by set aside from what businesses are paying for fees. So it's common, and it's available in many municipalities around the state. And maybe you could call the Art Commission and get some more information about how they put it together if it concerns you.
Yeah, I will do that. Thank you. And then I'm thinking if it's on public land, the developer's not paying for it. But yeah, I'm sure Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder appreciate it greatly. You have a good night.
Okay, thank you.
You know, the reality is not everybody sees the beauty in what other people see and put together. And one person may see as garbage what another person sees as art.
The newest public art that I'm aware of in San Francisco is a wonderful sculpture of Maya Angelou, at the SF Public Library. And that's certainly been inspiring for many people. But of course, if you like Maya Angelou's writing and her life story, then it will mean more to you. But the idea is to stimulate the public imagination. And in some way, I think he was stirred. Maybe not positively, but it's giving him something to think about.
Yes, he's partly affected by the art.
That's what we do. That's what we do as artists. We stir it up. We shake it up. And like crazy times of political uproar are in social like change. You know, sometimes the art is speaking to power, which is moving people, which is making people change, which is making people act, which is making people vote, which is making people go out and march and care about something. And you know what? Sometimes we it's misinterpreted, but his fire is fine. Be fired up for something, because often people ain't fired up about nothing, and I ain't got time for it.
I like it. Hey, you know, a quote comes to mind. Nobody knows what it means, but it's provocative. It gets the people going.
Yeah. San Francisco Airport has one of the most extensive programs around public art, and they work with the Art Commission as well. And many other airports around the country have picked up on that idea, and they're putting art in the airport, so it takes your mind off of your four-hour wait or whatever it is, the anxiety of being in the airport. You get to experience some art and history. So I think it's a good thing for civic life.
I agree.
But that said, art stirs controversy, and it's supposed to do that. And you will have divergent opinions when you look at a piece of art that someone else will see as amazing, and someone else will see it quite differently. And I think the response in the United States has been to spend quite a bit less in supporting the arts and supporting artists compared to what we're seeing in other industrialized nations.
That's certainly true. And a lot of that stems from controversies in the 1990s with the National Endowment for the Arts, where there was controversy about an artist named Robert Mapplethorpe. There was a Piss Christ piece that had some NEA money attached to it, and they pretty much stopped funding visual artists at the National Endowment for the Arts because of this. They do not fund individual artist projects.
If artists like Da Vinci or Michelangelo were born today in the United States, do you think that they would be able to produce some of the art that they did?
Absolutely not. I think the suppression is insane, but I think they would still fight for it. Who knows if they would be revered the same way? I think our social media has changed how we talk about what high art or what our fine art is nowadays. But I think that also is fine too, because the diverse pool of people who are absorbing the art is changing as well. You know, we need to make sure that it continues to be accessible. That's what I like to do at my theater company, SF Backo, so that more young people care about art, care about making art, and the face of who makes those art looks different. It's not the same kind of demographic of people who just support art, but who go and give to the art and who are making the art, who's behind it. The writers, the designers, the composers, the people singing, the people orchestrating, the people dancing, choreographing, the people painting, they all look like a different type of people, which I think is really, really important for this generation. But I don't know if Da Vinci and Leonardo would have made it right now. I don't know.
Well, they had patrons, and now our biggest patron is probably government, because if a corporation pays for art, they're going to put it in their building and you probably won't see it. So I think public art has an important place in society. Were you going to say something, Carter?
Shakespeare had the queen.
No, I was just agreeing. I think it certainly has its place. And, you know, I was touring museums with my my nieces and nephews this summer in Chicago. And one of my youngest niece kept saying, "Oh, I don't like that. I don't like that." And so finally I said to her, "How does it make you feel?" And her epiphany was, when we got home, she says, "You know what? I realize I don't have to like all art as long as it makes me feel something and think about something." So that was a big shift for her. So I think it's very important.
Wonderful. Yeah. One of my operating theories is that there's an artist in everybody. And if you can relate to that creative part of yourself. And this is what we were seeing in prisons, when people get excited about their own expression, about knowing that their particular way of seeing or doing or being is important in the world, then it gives them an ability to come out and really do something with that, you know. And we all have a need to be expressive and honest with ourselves and with other people.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. I mean, we're finding ways to support people who, the one thread that seems to be common is that they're expanding what people think. They're expanding people's experience.
They are. And we found this with teenagers, too. I mean, we had a young woman in our Spotlight program. I mentioned it earlier in this show that we do an internship program for high school students, placing them in internships with arts organizations in San Francisco. And there was one young woman who felt like she was being pushed into tech. She didn't want to do that. And she, through our program, we placed her with an organization that needed a graphic artist. That's what she wanted to do. And she ended up going to college, majoring in that and getting work in that field and feeling much more satisfied about that. She was actually on the verge of suicide. She wrote a note about that. And so if people feel discouraged about who they are and there's no outlet for that, it can be really devastating. You know, and often it's the people with the odd personalities. I think Rodney said something about that earlier. I'm not going to say that artists are weird. I don't think so. I think we're all weird in some way or another. But if you don't exactly fit into that square thing or whatever they are pushing you towards in school and your family and so forth, you can be frustrated the rest of your life. I know lawyers that were pushed into law school by their parents, and they're very unhappy. They don't know what to do with themselves. It can't be about the money. It has to be about how you're making an impact. Who are you? Are you really expressing your true meaning?
I've seen lots of lawyers that have gone down the wrong path and choose to stay there. They don't want to question the paradigm, but you have to find meaning. You have to find purpose.
Exactly.
Speaking of purpose, I'd like to walk you through a few of the programs that you have going. One of the things that the California Lawyers for the Arts stands for is arts advocacy. What kind of advocacy work do you do?
When we were founded in 1974, that was really part of our DNA. Our founders, Hamish Sanderson, Jerry Carlin, set out to have resale royalties for visual artists in California. We worked with the state legislature. We beat down challenges in the federal courts. And then, unfortunately, in 2018, that law was pretty much found unconstitutional by a federal appellate court. So we have done advocacy for artists' rights, for economic rights. And Artists in Community is another advocacy effort that we made when the NEA was about to be defunded. And we thought we need to develop more programs that are concrete expression of this. And that's how we started this internship program for high school students. At one point, we were doing internships with folks that were forced to work because of the job welfare to work program that the federal government mandated back in 1999. So we had a very outstanding program doing that. We had the highest retention rate of any funded program in San Francisco at that time. So we know that this kind of training and opportunity can be very valuable for the right people. And in fact, I saw a woman yesterday at a breakfast, an interfaith breakfast that was put on, and she said hello to me, and she had been in that program almost 25 years ago, and she's working and happy, and her daughter's in college. And folks were just finding a way out of that to do something that they love, that they could enjoy doing. We had placed her at South of Market Cultural Center, and she went on from there to other jobs. So it's just really exciting to see people develop a sense of purpose and who they are. And so that's an advocacy effort in a big picture sense. And this program, we think, reveals the humanity of people who may have made one mistake earlier on when they were kids or young people, and they end up spending a lot of time inside. And when they come out, do you still blame them for that? So we're sort of shifting the way we look as a society at people who are incarcerated and what their potential is. We're trying to help show the humanity of people through the arts. And that's an advocacy effort in a big picture sense. We also get involved in amicus briefs around various issues. One of our board committees is looking at AI now, and AI is very controversial. There are people who want to use it more, and there are people who feel like they're being infringed. And so our board is looking at possible legislation and deciding whether we should take an opinion of that. We've been involved in art censorship issues. Our basic tenor is to support expression if it's not harmful, if it's not violent. And so we've taken positions through amicus briefs in various litigation for that. So our advocacy effort is has been evolving over the years, but we do put our oar in the water when we are asked for, and our board agrees that this is something we should do. And we're always advocating for funding for the arts. And that's been a constant since the 1990s.
Yeah, we would be remiss to not mention that we actually were very heavily engaged in the Proposition 6 on the recent election, and unfortunately it didn't pass. But that's something that is very important to us, really advocating for rehabilitation for people who are released from prison. And I just have to do a shameless plug, because it's sort of in the same spirit of what we're talking about. We have one of our interns, his name is Dejan Joy. He actually interned with Empowerment Avenue. There's an amazing exhibit that he and the organization Empowerment Avenue put together at Berkeley Art Center right now. It's actually going on now through January 12th. And the name of the exhibit is called Painting Ourselves into Society. And it's an exhibit of artists who are all formerly incarcerated, amazing artists who are doing amazing things right now. And it's very interesting. So you talk about what you were talking about, Alma, in terms of finding their place in society once they get out. This exhibit was so strong and really spoke to me. I actually want to go back and see it again, but that's just a little plug for one of our interns, Dejan, who's doing well. He was one of our first interns in the Bay Area who's doing tremendously well in the arts community in the Bay Area.
I'm glad you mentioned that. We also commissioned a piece of public art, a monumental steel sculpture by an artist named Stone Singh, and it was mounted on the campus of Sacramento State about this issue of slavery and
involuntary servitude
in our prison system. Now, this lives in the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, but the California Constitution has a variation of that, which says slavery is prohibited, period. Involuntary servitude is prohibited except for people convicted of a crime. So there was a big effort by advocates, and we joined that effort to change this language in the state constitution. As Carter said, it was Prop 6. It did not change. It was not approved by the voters. I think part of the reason is because involuntary servitude is not well understood. But the Department of Corrections was on board, the governor's office, the legislature. We're hoping we'll have another go at it. If not at the state level, then at the federal.
Yes, yes. Yes, the feedback has been people have responded, because now they didn't pass. People said, oh, I didn't understand what it meant.
Right, that's right, yeah. And so the 13th Amendment in the U.S. Constitution could be a big lift. However, many states around the country, at least 7, have changed their state constitutions in the past 5 years. So there is a growing movement about this. And the idea is that this language, this mandate to force people to work, is a vestige of slavery, which is really can't be supported, that we should still be having slavery in the United States of America 150 years after slavery was abolished. There's a remnant from the Civil War and the Reconstruction years. It's just not sustainable.
You have some other programs that perhaps deserve a bit of mention. What is the California Inventors Assistance Program?
Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you, Jeff. This was started about 10 years ago by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office under the America Invents Act. The goal is to provide pro bono legal assistance for inventors who are seeking patents. If they can't afford to hire an attorney, which is very expensive for patent legal support, we have a program that has placed, I believe, over 600 or 700 people with lawyers during this time to help them get pro bono legal assistance.
And
we have other pro bono assistance as well. It depends on income qualification, obviously.
You also have a lawyer referral and information service. Is that through the Bar Association of San Francisco, or you have your own in addition?
We have our own referral service. It's certified by the bar, and we're one, if not the only, statewide certified program to provide referral services for lawyers. We try to match the person with the art discipline that the lawyer is familiar with. Music lawyers may not know visual arts, et cetera, and people who do contract negotiations don't do litigation. So we try to find the right match for people. And I mentioned earlier that we have a program to provide short consultations as well as longer engagements.
Well, we haven't covered quite all of what I wanted to go through tonight, but I did tell everybody that I'd give you a bit of time to talk about the things you're currently working on and what that means to everybody, and just really take a moment in the limelight to share it with us. Rodney, I think I told you you'll go first, so take a couple minutes.
Yes, and I'll give some time back so that folks can really hear the amazing things that are happening at California Lawyers for the Arts. But again, I'm Rodney Jackson, co-founder and artistic director of SF Backo, the San Francisco Bay Area Theater Company. We just had a birthday. We turned 10 years old. It's been incredible making theater with people of color, with queer people, with young people in San Francisco, really redefining what it means to call this home. This is the place I grew up in, born and raised in. I love that I became an artist who went off to do this stuff in New York, was on Broadway, went to an incredible institution, but really wanted to come home and bring the love of theater and theater making back to my hometown. And what I love making is new work. We at SF Backo really champion new works. And we believe that the process of development, trial and error, workshops, stage reading, and collaboration is really, really key in that. And we have three really cool projects coming up next year, really whimsical play called Cuckoo Edible Magic by an incredible new playwright, a young man named Reed Flores, who's from the Bay Area. Another musical, which I'm directing, called The Day the Sky Turned Orange, which centers the wild and crazy day in San Francisco 5 years or four now, 4.5-ish years ago, when the sky was orange, really stepping into like science of the world and how do we connect young people and engage people on a lens of theater with what's going on and music. And the last one is a musical called Every Saturday Night, which is about a lot of stuff, but really it's about Black people in the 1940s and 50s in San Francisco and the Fillmore, and how that area was one which was about really invested in the African-American culture and what redevelopment did to Black people in San Francisco, the roots of my people, the roots of a lot of people's people here in San Francisco, and how now the city is almost less than 6% Black, and what that means to the demographic, the sociology, the humanitarian effects of what goes on here, and how we look at that from a musical standpoint. So I want to look at touch people's hearts through music, through theater, through dance. And yeah, that's SF Backo. Check us out at sfbacko.org. Yes, and I'm so fortunate for California Lawyers for the Arts because they've helped us so much tremendously with the internships through Isaiah, through others. It's been incredible. So yeah, I'll pass it back.
All righty, let me turn it over to Isaiah. Take about a minute, tell us what you'd like to about what you're working on now.
For sure. Thank you again, Jeff.
for having you on the show. So right now, I just recently launched an AI tool called Smart Lead Agent. And again, that goes back to my experience with generating leads for insurance agents. Although the tool can be used by mostly anybody in sales, anybody who basically needs an appointment setter or any type of automation within their business. And so, and also I'll mention again, I have a company called Design Systems, spelled DZ9 Systems. And if you're looking for any automations, application, or you have an idea for a product and you have the budget, feel free to reach out.
All righty. Carter, would you like to go next? Tell us the things you got your hands in right now.
Well, my hands right now are tied with DCF, Designing Creative Futures. We are finishing up this fall cohort in the next couple of weeks. And then we're off to our next cohort, which will begin in February. For anyone who's interested, you can find our application on our website, CA Lawyers for the Arts.org. And the deadline for the applications is January the 10th. Yes, if you know anyone's interested, if you're interested in yourself, someone listening, please do reach out to us. It's an amazing program. It's $20 an hour. We pay the interns 20 hours a week. We place you at different arts organizations around the city. And so, yeah, we're just really pushing forward on California, on Designing Creative Futures. But I also just want to, just going back to Prop 6, I just want to encourage everyone to just learn as much as you can about involuntary servitude. This is something that should not be in our Constitution, particularly in California. We were supposed to be founded as a free state, and we still have this in our language. Many other states, many other red states have actually changed the language in their Constitution, and we're still lagging. If you want to learn more about this, we've created a lot of programming around this. You can go to our YouTube channel, California Lawyers for the Arts YouTube channel. We have lots and lots of information and programming to learn more about involuntary servitude, because I think that once people really understand that this language is preventing people from being rehabilitated while inside, and when they get out, they have no transferable skills and they find themselves back in the cycle of crime and back, you know, this is how we reduce recidivism, by striking this from our language in the California Constitution. So that's what I'm up to. Thanks for asking, Jeff.
And I'll leave it to you. We have about 30 seconds left.
I see. Okay. Well, I'm writing a book about all of this called From Prison Arts to Creative Futures. It's going to be published by Allworth Press next year, 2025. But meanwhile, I wanted your listeners to know about our upcoming workshops and events. Many of them are on Zoom. We're having a filmmaker's legal clinic, workshops on nonprofit formation, from contracts to cash flow, relax with tax. That's our perennial. These are coming up and they're all on our website. Thank you for mentioning that, Carter. CALawyersfortheArts.org. Thank you so much for having us, Jeff. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've helped celebrate the 50th anniversary of the California Lawyers for the Arts. Our guests tonight have been Executive Director Alma Robinson, Carter Lewis, Rodney Jackson, and Isaiah Love. Next week, be sure to join Your Legal Rights, where we have, for the last time this year, we will be talking about landlord-tenant law. Best of all, we take your calls and answer your questions. Once again, a big thanks to all of our guests and for all of you for joining us at the controls. Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Have a good night and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.